start to turn it around.
If we all could love one another, all the world could be as one. Just take time to love one another, all the world could be as one. Black man, white man, standing together, no more fighting to be done. Yellow, red man, dancing together, all the world could be at one. Stay.
And welcome to Heal DC. This is Joni, and we are broadcasting live from the African American Civil War Museum. We're at 11 o'clock. There's going to be a very special event, which Frank Smith will be telling you about in a moment. We are going to be talking today about two main issues. One is the role that African Americans played. Over 200,000 African American soldiers played in the Civil War. And we're also going to be talking about Project 2025 and the impact on veterans, and that's going to be in a few moments. Kalia, you can play our song that welcomes Frank on, Sweet Honey in the Rock, Sojourner's Battle Hymn. You ready for that? Otherwise, we'll go right to Frank Smith if you're not ready for that song.
We're ready.
Frank, tell us what...
Huh? We're ready.
Okay, let's hear it.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. As we go marching on, we are called the Yankee soldiers who've enlisted for the war. We are fighting for the union. We are fighting for the Lord. We nation to a rebel father than a white man ever saw. As we go marching on, look there above the center where the flag is waving bright. We are going out slaving. We are bound for freedom of life. We mean to show Jeff Davis how the Africans can fight. As we go marching on, glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Okay, that was sweet. Sweet Honey in the Rock with Sojourner's Battle Hymn. And it's a great song to introduce and welcome on board not only Chuck Hicks, but Frank Smith. Frank, tell us what's going to be happening today and why it's so special.
Okay, good morning, first of all, to Joni and to Chuck Hicks, who I have not talked to in about 3 days. If I go 3 days without talking to Chuck, I sound the alarm. But it's a really a beautiful day here in Washington, D.C., at the African American Civil War Memorial, where we honor 209,145 Black Union soldiers who joined President Lincoln in the Civil War to fight for their freedom. 209,000 veterans. And let me say something particularly about these veterans. Two things important I want you to remember. 209,145 African American soldiers. 150,000 of these people were enslaved when the war started. 150,000, 3 out of 4 of them. So when you come to our memorial, you see this whole sea of names, 209,000 names. You count 1, 2, 3, 4. The first 3 would have been enslaved. And I like to do that sometimes when I have white visitors out here. I say, okay, we're going to do a little game here. We're going to count 1, 2, 3, 4. Everybody count out 1, 2, 3, 4. And then I stop and I say, okay, the first 3 of you all would have been enslaved. So you can see some white person say, oh, no, I wouldn't have been no slave. I say, yeah, that's I wouldn't have been no slave either. But that's the way this system works. That 3 out of 4 of them were enslaved, and they literally fought their way from slavery to freedom. And yet, The country gave them no respect and no honor and no monuments and no museums until we started this project about in 1998. So I'm pleased to say thank you to these African-American soldiers who joined the Union Army. They not only ended slavery, but they kept America united under one flag. This country would have been separate and divided. You think it's separate and divided now. It would have been separate and divided with two armies, one Northern Army and one Southern Army, two presidents, one president of the Confederate South and one president of the North. It would have had probably two sets of laws. So maybe the Constitution still would have applied to the North. It wouldn't have applied to the South. So when we hear this talk today about people saying they're going to get rid of the Constitution, it unnerves me. But I want to say today on Veterans Day that we owe these veterans, all veterans, a great deal of respect and a great deal of gratitude. And I'm proud to be associated with the African American Civil War Memorial, which finally pays tribute to those soldiers.
And we want to give thanks to Frank Smith and all the people who work with him to create this museum and to create the memorial and to create this event that's happening at 11 o'clock today. We're going to remind you again later in the show and talk more about it. But it's still not too late now. It's a little bit after 10 for you to come down if you're nearby. What do you say, Frank?
I say hop on the subway, get on the Green Line. It's still running. It's running today on normal schedule, I believe.
Yes, it is.
You can get on the subway. You get off if you're downtown, you take the Green Line, the Green Belt, in the direction of Green Belt. And when you get to the U Street, it will say African American Civil War Memorial. That's where you get off.
10th Street.
And you walk right up the steps and you'll see the African American Civil War Memorial. We'll be here until about noon today.
Yes, and again, I want to thank Frank and everyone involved with the African American Civil War Museum. I consider it one of the top treasures that we have here in Washington, D.C. So we thank Frank. And some of you may remember a young man named Harry Jones who worked very closely with Frank. And one thing that Harry always talked about was, I think it was called the Loyal League, which there were tens of thousands of Black people that were organizing underground in hiding, in secret, right here. And he would take us by, walk us down 14th Street and tell us that this was the real history of 14th Street. So we remember Harry Jones today, and perhaps Frank could talk a little bit more about that later. But these are things that we never hear about. Is that right, Frank?
Absolutely. Harry, unfortunately, he passed away about 4 or 5 years ago, 59 years old, right in the prime of his life. He was a retired Marine, so having him on our staff, having him be part of our curatorial staff that was planning these exhibits was really a very important piece of our operation because he brought the contemporary military. You know, we speak in these old, they marched to a different drama back in the Civil War. They had different battle songs and stuff. Harry knew the modern day military cadence in the modern day Marine Corps. So we were really fortunate to have him with us for so many years, but unfortunately we loved him, as we say in the Baptist church, we loved him, but God loved him more. So about 4 or 5 years.
But we remember Harry because that lesson is very important for us today. The enslaved people were organizing and freed people were, Black people were organizing right here on 14th Street. Thousands of people. So this is an important lesson for us today. And a little later in the show, we're going to have a special guest with Frank that you can if you come, you will hear him in person.
Absolutely. We have a young fellow here who's going to talk about his experience in the military and tell us a little bit about what he's done after he got out of the military to help make the life better for everybody, including our veterans. So we're still on the battlefield right now. You know, our Army, I tell people all the time, you know, you never think about it this way, but it's the United States Army that's carrying the flag all around the world. All these bases are all surrounded by flags. When these men go off base in their uniforms, they have the American flag on their patches, on their arm patches, whether they are Navy, Air Force, Army, doesn't matter. They all carry the patch with them wherever they go. They're the ones that are out there talking about freedom and democracy and about a good old America that we all dream about. It hasn't come to be that to all of us, not quite yet, but we do dream about it a lot. And the Bible says, without a vision, a people perish. So these visions are important to us. It's important for us to continue to talk about freedom and democracy, even in our moments of despair, when we think things today are not going exactly the way we want them to go. Maybe the last election didn't go exactly the way you wanted it to go. But it's important for us to remember the great principles of democracy and freedom that we know today to be important. They are important. They always will be important. And I think we have to keep holding up that notion that people all over the world, not just in the United States, in Mississippi, Georgia, New York City, ought to have the right to vote. It's the vote that makes us equal. And we have to fight to defend that vote. And let me just say one last thing on this while I'm on the subject. We may not have got the result that we wanted out of that election here last week, but 2 years from now, there'll be another election. We'll be right back on the battlefield trying to figure out how we straighten out the Congress and the U.S. Senate. So don't give up hope. Don't give up. It's okay to be sad for a moment, to be in the moment of despair, but find yourself a good gospel song. That's what I do. And cheer yourself up. And get going again.
Yes, and we have to start organizing now, as Harry Jones would say. We can't necessarily wait for 2 years, but we hardly can wait maybe even for 2 weeks. But we're going to be organizing out there. I know Chuck is, and a lot of listeners are. And, of course, we know that a lot of the veterans are opposed to war. They've experienced war firsthand, and we're about to speak to one of those veterans who fought in Vietnam and is also a member of the Veterans for Peace, and is going to be talking to us about, we've been hearing about Project 2025, but we haven't yet heard much about the potential impact on veterans and veterans' health care, and specifically around Project 2025. This young man is named Michael Marceau. He comes from the DMV, raised and born in the DMV. He fought in Vietnam. And I'm proud to say also he is a member of WPFW, a sustaining member, so he supports us. We're going to hear from him in a moment. I asked him what music he would like to hear, so we're going to welcome in with this song about the jungle, which I'm sure he had firsthand experience with it. So let's hear it. And then we'll go right to Michael. Are we ready, Kalia, with the song? I guess not. Okay.
You said it's playing now. Is this taking a while to play? That's all.
Okay, so we welcome Michael Marceau. Again, he's with Veterans for Peace. Welcome, Michael. You're going to be talking about Project 2025, some of your own experiences dealing with the healthcare system. But tell us a little bit about you and your time in Vietnam, just briefly. Welcome.
I think their internet or our internet connection went out. What's
recording
one of the two?
In progress.
They're frozen, so I gotta fix something.
Okay, and perhaps you can call him. You can also use the telephone to call him. And
he's back.
Michael, you there?
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you well. Tell us, you served in Vietnam, and what years were you there?
Well, I got drafted on my 20th birthday in January of 1969. By September, I was in the Central Highlands of Vietnam, very fairly close to Cambodia. I was working the telephone switchboard for the big base camp that we were at in support of the 4th Infantry Division. On May 6th of 1970, our base camp came under a rocket attack. I got very badly injured from a piece of shrapnel that did a number on my body. And I was in the 71st Evac Hospital over there for about a month, and then wound up back here at Walter Reed in D.C. from about June of 1970 till February of 71, where I was medically retired. Which was not obviously the best chapter of my life, but I'm still here today to speak for the people who can't speak anymore.
I hear you, and I was glad that you shared with me that you actually protested with Code Pink and Medea Benjamin in front of the Walter Reed a few years back.
That was kind of my entry into the activism community. I found somewhere that there was a vigil every Friday night at Wall Street Hospital. And since I was a patient there for 8 months, that was pretty close to my heart. So I met another member of Veterans Trapeze, and he got me involved in the organization. So I've been working with the folks in the DC area ever since then, and have lobbied Congress, have been on various other actions and rallies and that kind of stuff, as you're all well aware of. And, you know, it's just a very welcoming and very dedicated group of men and women who speak out on various issues of peace and justice or injustice. And we're trying to get our government to make some changes and support the veterans and in their areas of need.
Yes, and Code Pink, of course, can be heard on our station every Thursday at 11 a.m. But let's talk about Project 2025. Many people have been hearing about it and all kinds of concerns. It's a 900-page document, but we have not yet heard much about the potential impact on the veterans. And I know you, Michael, have been experiencing, there've been already too much privatization of, from what I understand, of the VA going on, but this could be even much more drastic. So tell us, from your understanding, what are some of the potential dangers to veterans with Project 2025 and the healthcare system through the VA?
Well, there's some things that are already in effect that are causing some problems to the veterans. One is the Mission Act, and two is the Choice Act. And basically what that says is that if a veteran cannot be seen in a timely manner at a VA facility, I don't remember if it's 30 days or 60 days, but some fairly short time frame, then they're eligible for care outside the VA hospital system, and the VA will pay for it. I was listening to C-SPAN this morning, and I heard these just numbers that said about 40% of the VA budget currently goes to these outside places, which are called community care. And I think the only care involved is the care of the bank accounts for the doctors and clinics that are involved in treating veterans. So it's a concern right now. And while I haven't read 900 pages of nonsense, I'm sure it would just get worse depending on who Trump appoints to the head of the VA and the head of the other government committees and departments. So that is a big concern to us veterans, as it's already happening.
Well, as many of us know, things may already be happening that are not things we support, but many of us believe it can get a million times worse. And certainly our healthcare in general is going to be at risk. Obamacare Medicare and Medicaid, all of those things are going to be at risk with this new person in charge. But certainly, I think the veterans would have a major concern, and I haven't had a chance to read. I was hoping you might have been able to read that section in Project 2025, and maybe it's a good data for all of us to check out exactly what is in there. I imagine he has plans, or they have plans, to totally dismantle the Veterans Administration's health care program. So that's no small concern. And I think on Veterans Day, it's a good day for us to be thinking specifically about that. Do you have any other information?
One of the things that concerns us veterans is that, number one, the VA is trained to care for veterans with multiple concerns, different injuries to different systems of their body. I mean, in my case, my lungs were affected, my nerve were affected, my artery was affected. So that's three different systems that I need help with. And one of the things that we're finding is that the VA as a public entity has to meet certain standards of care, and they have to do reports every year or 2 years as to whether they're meeting these standards. And the thing we're finding out is these community care institutions do not have to meet those same standards. They do not have to meet the training standards for their physicians and medical people. So, you know, if veterans are being cared for by untrained and people who are not held accountable, that is, of course, a huge concern, as it should be.
And again, it probably could get much, much worse than that. We're almost out of time, but perhaps Veterans for Peace, you want to say a little bit about that organization? I know you have chapters all around the country, and I'm not sure Veterans Peace started around the Vietnam War, but just tell us a little bit about Veterans for Peace as a national organization with chapters many places.
Actually, we were started about 1985 when nothing was going on. A lot of our founders were Vietnam veterans. They were part of an organization called Vietnam Veterans Against the War, and so they kind of transitioned into Veterans for Peace. But a couple of points from our statement of purpose is we as military veterans do hereby confirm our greater responsibility to serve the cause of world peace. We want to increase public awareness of the causes and costs of war. We want to restrain our government from intervening in other countries' wars. We want to seek justice for veterans and all victims of war. And so that's some of the things we're working on. What we do is lobby Congress, and there's a committee that's called Save Our VA. And what we do is keep in contact with our legislators in here in DC, urging them to support or oppose various pieces of legislation regarding veterans. So it's a kind of an ongoing situation here, and we're trying to do the best we can to protect what we have right now and not let it get any worse.
And thank you for that. And I know that a lot of veterans, of course, are anti-war now, and including being against the war in Gaza. And I know you are among those. So we salute you, and we thank you for the work you do. And we will be happy to be in touch with you in the future as this situation moves forward with regards to health care for veterans. This show in particular, To Heal DC, has always been dedicated and focusing on health care and the need for a national health care system. We're the only industrialized country in the world that doesn't have universal health care for all its citizens or all its people. So now it's going to be even more of a battle that we need to be mindful of people who definitely need health care, including the veterans. So, Michael, we thank you. Any final words for today?
Well, just to thank you and WFW for the invitation to join you folks today, and also to my veteran friends and allies, I wish, and families, I wish you a quiet and peaceful rest of your day. And we'll see you in the streets or in Congress.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Michael with the D.C. chapter of Veterans for Peace. We appreciate his words of wisdom, and we will be speaking with him again, I'm sure, in the future, as well as other members of Veterans for Peace. I'd like to thank Mark Harrison for making sure we had Veterans for Peace spotlighted today. We're going to move quickly back to speaking with Frank, and he has another guest we're going to be speaking to as well. This is To Heal DC. This is Joni, and Chuck is sitting here right where with right across from me. We don't have the equipment to have him speak from his chair over there, but he's definitely here with us in spirit. And we're listening to 89.3 FM, WPFW, and we're going to go back to speaking with Frank Smith about what's happening today. We may be joined by Greg Carr. That remains to be seen. But Kalia, let me know if Greg is on the phone, and he'll jump in as well. So, Frank, let's return to today and what is happening. And I think you have someone else who'll be sharing with us.
Yes. We are here today at the African-American Civil War Memorial at 10th and U Street Northwest, right across from the African-American Civil War Museum, which is on Vermont Avenue, and, of course, next door to the Masonic Temple. Many people know this neighborhood is that way. But we celebrate we have several annual celebrations that we do here at our memorial. One of them is Veterans Day. And so we're inviting the public to come out to join us as we celebrate our veterans, our past veterans who fought so hard for us in the Civil War to win. And let me say that war ended slavery, and it also brought about the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which said, and the 14th Amendment was brought about because African Americans were not citizens of the United States. And there'd been a court decision called the Dred Scott decision that said that black people had no rights that white people were bound to respect. And so they also said the founding fathers never intended that black people, neither slave nor free, would be citizens of the United States. So after Dred Scott, we had to get the 14th Amendment passed. The 14th Amendment says you can't discriminate against people. And so it's out of that amendment that the gay rights movement comes. It's out of that the, of course, Roe v. Wade eventually comes out of that amendment too. So it has meant progress in this society for minorities who've been historically discriminated against here in the United States. And so I wanted to say that because for people sometimes think, well, you know, you're just stuck in a war that happened 150 years ago. Well, it might have happened 150 years ago, but we're still fighting for our right to vote. We're still fighting for our right for our votes to be counted. We're still fighting for rights in the case of Roe Wade, rights that people had for 50 years, lost them, and had to win them all over again. That happened to black people, too. We during Reconstruction, black people running for office, they served Mississippi, had two African-American citizens, senators. Today, Mississippi has two right-wing Republican senators, and that are white, too. They haven't had a black senator since Reconstruction. So we're still fighting to regain rights that we had one time, lost them, had to win them all over again. And so Frederick Douglass says the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. I think that's our fate, and we all might as well get ready to dig in and trench ourselves, get ready for this fight that's going to continue. But when we fight, we do win, and when we fight, we always make progress. We always make measurable progress. So I want people to be encouraged to know that we're not going to give up the fight. We have a lot of good shows to stand on. We got a lot of good examples to bring up for you. And you just find yourself a good role model, and you stick by them, and let's go win this thing all over again.
Absolutely. And we should introduce Frank a little bit more than I did in the beginning. Of course, many people know Frank Smith, but for those people who do not know him, many of us consider him a hero in the area. And he is a native of Georgia. He was on with us last week, and he's one of those, was right there in one of the battleground states. We were glad he could be with us last week. but we're just as glad you can be with us today. Frank also is a veteran of perhaps not the Army, but a veteran of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And we're always amazed that many younger people and even older people don't always know about SNCC. So Frank is here to make sure we remember SNCC, and he always talks about from the Civil War through today, teaching us the lessons from those days. And again, you know, when we think about it, it's not surprising that we don't hear about the over 209 plus thousand Black people who fought in that war to help end slavery. That should be a top message that we hear all day long and all the time. But it takes organizations such as Frank Smith and the African American Civil War Museum to remind us of that and celebrate those 209,000 people who helped to end slavery. And of course, we heard in the last week, a whole group is out there trying to frighten young people that they're going to need to return to slavery with those horrific text messages that they got saying, you're ready to be sent to the plantation. So the issue of slavery is something we're going to unfortunately need to keep fighting. And Frank, do you want to introduce someone that you want?
Okay, right. So today is Veterans Day, and like all good citizens, we celebrate Veterans Day. And at the African American Civil War Memorial, we put the colors out, the stars and the stripes, and we earned our rights to these stars and stripes on the battlefields, not only of the Civil War, but in Vietnam. You just heard that young man there on the phone earlier talking about his experience in Vietnam. We can take it closer to home. My son, Tony, my oldest son, was in the first Gulf War, and he is 55, 56 years old now, and he's been scarred ever since he came home from that war. He's been in drug and rehab treatment ever since. These scars, as Marco said on the phone earlier, these scars stick around for the rest of your life, and I know that. I experience it every day with my son. Now he has children and grandchildren. We're all involved with trying to keep him safe and keep him strong and keep him healthy, which is very difficult to do. But we all have our burdens to bear. And some of those burdens are brought about by war. And one of our speakers this morning is a young man who has been around, been my friend for years, has been working with me here at the Memorial and Museum. His wife is one of our reenactors who puts on period dress and goes on these battlefields. His name is Stanley J. Williams, Stanley King Williams, and for many people in the area, you know him because he's a former deacon over at Shiloh Baptist Church. He's head of the D.C. Hall of Fame organization that recognizes good work here in the District of Columbia, and he's also a veteran. And so, Stan, I'm going to say give us a couple of minutes about what you're going to hear this morning. If you show up and hear Stan when he speaks to us this morning, Stanley Williams.
Good morning, and a salute to all veterans who have served our country. I'm glad to be able to be here to say something in recognition of all of them. I'm a veteran also. I was drafted in 1970, and I served in Nuremberg, Germany as a neuropsychiatric specialist in Germany, but the rest of my career has been in service to veterans, more or less, from my work at the D.C. Department of Employment Service as a Veterans Employment Representative, on to the Department of Labor as one of the state directors for Veterans Employment and Training. I retired in 2014, and I currently serve also, in addition to the D.C. Hall of Fame, also with the Employer Support for the Guard and Reserve, which is an organization that promotes better relationships between National Guard and reservists and their employers. But today, I'll be talking more or less about Black veterans. and the their experiences and what their contributions have been throughout our history and all of our major conflicts. But I want to go back to that healthcare issue that the gentleman spoke to previously as it relates to Project 2025. And I just want to read a short paragraph from that particular issue. Project 25 proposes to make it harder for veterans to obtain disability benefits by reducing the number of medical conditions that service members can claim to qualify for disabled status. Under the change, veterans currently eligible for disability rating, but who have not yet made claims, could be denied benefits entirely. And those who have already made claims and been granted a disability rating could see their benefits from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and other safety net benefits slashed. Project 25 also pushes to automate claims, which could increase denial rates, similar to the experience patients have had with health insurance denials, and place a heavier administrative burden on veterans trying to get disability claims. Also, what they're doing, they're going to cut the number of health situations that you can actually claim that you can currently get a disability rating for. They're going to reduce the number of disabilities that you can claim benefits under the VA. So I just wanted to insert that. And also, as it relates to homeless veterans, as you know, the Homeless Veterans Initiative with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and also the VA has been fairly successful in helping 81,400 veterans receive rental support and as relates to getting them off the streets and into housing as such.
Man, don't tell us all
that. That might be in, too.
Say some of
I'm not going to talk about that. I got a lot to say. So, but anyway, as it relates to the housing situation, that also may end under Project 2025. So, but as it relates to what I'm going to speak about today, as I said previously, I'm going to just go through what Black veterans who have often been written out of history. And I want to personally thank Frank for creating this museum. Someone who thought they knew American history and was educated when the information that he and Harry brought forth has been a brand new education, not only for myself, but I'm sure for the nation as a whole. And, you know, I've been around this guy for 50 years, and it ceases to amaze me with the things, the ideas he comes out, but he also brings them to fruition. So I want to really thank him for bringing, educating us and increasing our knowledge as that.
Thank you very much. So if you get here by 11:15, you'll get to hear his whole speech this morning here at the African-American Civil War Memorial for Veterans Day. So now I'm going to turn the program back to our hostess here, to Joni, who has really been a great inspiration to me. She works hard at this. She always makes sure I'm on point when I try to talk, and she keeps me in front of the audience. And so I want to thank her for that. She does a good work here in the district. That's why we always support her. Here you go, Joni.
Frank, and I'm excited to introduce another guest who many of you know, but before I want to make sure I say this in case I forget later. We want to dedicate also this show to the many WPFW veterans who are now ancestors, and two in particular who are very, who I work very closely with, and that is A.C. Byrd, who was with us for a long time, served on the our local advisory board. He was insistent that every Veterans Day he helped put the show together. So thank you, A.C., as an ancestor, and also Brother Bay, who was a co-host with me and was a Marine and very much talked about and he was exposed to a lot of things that probably caused him to get that cancer. He was out there in Puerto Rico when they were doing the bombing. And so we dedicate the show. I'm remembering Brother Bay and A.C. Byrd today. And I'm very excited to pass the phone over to Greg Carr. We have the same birthday, but Greg Carr now can be heard on many, many different platforms. In Class with Carr, on YouTube, you can easily access it. He can explain it. But, Greg, I know you have a lot to share with us today about...
I'm here for the ritual. That's what I'm here for.
Well, Greg says things all the time that inspires me and many others quite a bit. I heard you talking this weekend about Langston Hughes, about Paul Robeson, and perhaps share some of your thoughts about what we've been through in the past few days.
Okay. I'll keep this very quick. I can't wait for this ceremony. My niece was in town. She's looking at coming to school at Howard. And so we came down here and came to the memorial. They're back in Texas now, another state of the Confederacy. I don't call it the old Confederacy. They're still the Confederacy. Good to see my brother and leader, Frank Smith, back from the Confederacy state of Georgia. The only thing that changed on November the 6th is everything we were fighting for before November the 5th, we continue. Oh, yeah, and I guess there was an election. But we know that we will win. That's without a doubt. Yes, Saturday, I was talking about, Abel Meyerfield's song, The House I Live In, same guy who wrote Strange Fruit. They made a little movie, Frank Sinatra was in, and that's very nice, but it was Paul Robeson that brought those words alive to us, long before others like Mahalia Jackson, Sonny Rollins recorded that. It was really a critique of America, and it's our obligation for our common humanity to critique this country. It's as Langston Hughes said 12 years later, his poem, Let America Be America Again. It never was America to me, but this I vow America will be. Donald Trump, Elon Musk, Junior Varsity Vance, all your friends, you have struck a rock, and we will wash over you like the sea, the way we have washed over you before. And those 200,000 plus men whose names are on the monument across the street that we're going to honor in a second, washed over you like the sea, their families, their wives. Today, on my mind heavy is one of the reenactors, Frank, who made transition about a year ago. Yasantiwa Blake, Dr. Annette Blake, she and her sister, who would come here many times, she made transition in November 2023. So she's here in ancestral form, along with everybody who fights for our common humanity. And as we sit here finally in this beautiful edifice, man, I can't wait till this opens, man. This is serious business. Y'all got to come to this Civil War memorial, man, because it isn't just the Civil War. As Frank reminds us, it's about participating in the society we're in to make it better, whether that be the vote, whether that be to fight for health care or housing, whether it be to make sure that we stand in harm's way for those who are unable to for themselves. The only thing that changed on November the 5th is that they struck a rock, and now we get to wash over them like the sea.
Absolutely, and we got to increase our organizing. And one thing that, just one among many things that I'm going to say, that PFW needs to strengthen our partnerships and collaboration with organizations. And I'm hoping, Greg Carr, that we could figure out ways to work more closely with you and the young people as well that you work with. I got a call over the weekend from a person from a community school in Montgomery County. She was asking for help because the children in the first grade are coming up to her and are frightened. It said, we elected a man who hates us and wanted mm-hmm. support us. So I think we need to figure out ways to have some of these young people, Greg, on the air, perhaps with some of your students who can talk about lessons from history of supporting people as we're going to be marching through these even more perilous times.
Absolutely.
So we have a lot of work cut out for us. We have more organizing to do, and learning from some of the organizing that took place. And as we said, our ancestors will be right there helping us.
Yes, one other thing very quickly, Joni. I don't want to minimize what you just said, because our students are rightly concerned. All of us are, but last week, the Howard students who lined up with such enthusiasm on Tuesday night and then left there, many of their spirits were deeply bruised. And the next day and then the following day and through this weekend, just sitting and listening with them, just because they wanted to say, the children of people who came here from other countries, whether it be Haiti or Nigeria or Jamaica or Ghana, who are now concerned, particularly the Haitian students, who are, you know, we're going to fight with and for them because they are us. And it really is something. And as I sit here with you all and I think about it, you, Frank, and you, Chuck, and think about that y'all were younger or the same age as these young people were, and you faced down the devil and broke the back, which is why they've worked for the last 60 years to try to roll back the 20th century. But reminding those young people that we will win, at the same time also being in community with them because they are hurt and they're scared.
Absolutely. And I wanted to say that this is actually the niece of Gass DeNeal. Some of you may remember the poet Gass DeNeal. And she contacted me. She said, young students sit in the fifth grade are frightened. And they said, what are we going to do? So I think we need to form new ways of Frank and Chuck and Greg of organizing to have some of these young people on the air with the elders. To have, you know, again, we have a large number of Latino people. I think he's talking about deporting tens of millions of people. And so how do we begin to have coalitions between, let's say, the Latino organizations and the Haitian organizations? We're going to be needing to work together. And we're going to be needing older people, including older people just who are in Greg's classes, talking to some of these young people in the fifth grade. Because some of us remember what it was like to be in the fifth grade and be scared.
I'm just reminded of something I used to hear older people say, when things are going bad, they say, this too will pass. This too will pass.
Well,
stand your ground. But this too will pass, and it will.
It may pass, but we some of us remember our ancestors saying, we got to organize. We got to organize now. And you know, some people.
Yeah, I told the PFW family I was in the deep, I thought what was going to be a deep blue state of Georgia, slugging it out for about 10 days leading up to the election. And I sat there at the end of the night on the election night with my relatives and friends at a celebration that we thought was going to be a victory party. It turned out to be more like a wake, but we say things at wakes that are important. Wakes are important.
Yes, sir.
Because you got to remember what you did and what you found and who you talked to and who your friends are too. And so this is how you start. And I think this is really what we realized there as we sat there with this team in a county that was 80% Republican. We didn't think we were going to win our county. We thought we were going to win the state. But every vote counted. So every vote we got down there, and I was strategizing with them about how they increased the vote by 10%. This is the kind of organizing we were going to have to do because we were out-organized by the Republicans to some extent. Because they started out years ago organizing in these states. They figured they had lost the ability to win nationwide, and they had, really. There's no reason why they shouldn't be winning because the good people outnumber them. And we do outnumber them. We do outnumber the good people. The good people. We started with Barack Obama. Good people outnumber them, but we just didn't get organized right and took a lot of things for granted. We won't be in that position again. We know now. We are woke, as they say, and we won't go back to sleep. And we're not going back to sleep. And we're going to stand our ground. This is our country. If these young people that we recognize out here on this memorial wall had not joined President Lincoln in the Civil War, America would have been divided. It would have been two countries. It would not be the country that you know today. We saved this country, and we tried to save it again with our candidate. We tried to save it again. We just weren't able to do it. We tried to save it again, but we're not going to give up on this fight. Because this is an important fight. I travel all over the world. I've been in the civilization belt of Europe. I've been in the Africa and in various countries in Africa and South Africa too, by the way. And this is a good country. It's a place where people care about each other, where we have good laws, national laws. People just violate them sometimes.
And when they violate them, they ought to be in jail. Some of them that are ought to be in jail. But we have all the writers on our side. I know that from my own personal experience. And I don't think we ought to be we have to find a way to cheer our young people up. I work with some of your Howard students. I have my own children and grandchildren who are looking at me now saying, well, what do we do next to granddaddy? And so we have to tell them, you know, look, keep the faith. Don't give up on your friends. Don't give up on your neighbors. Let's keep fighting. This too will pass.
And we need to have the generations working together. So the fifth grade children or even the third grade children are hearing from the older children or young adults at Howard and then listening to some of us, you know, who went through. And we because as a child, and I was in the McCarthy period, I experienced a lot of frightening things. I know what it's like to be afraid as a child. So we need to support the children. We need to talk to the children, and the children need to talk to the other people. Let's see, we have about 2 minutes, 1 minute left. And then again, we invite everybody to come out at 11 o'clock. Just 1 minute, because we have to go out with Frank Song.
All right. And one thing I just want to say very quickly, this is Stan Williams again, is that history is very important. We have to give our young people something to stand on and know and give them context of what this moment means as such. And I think one of the things I'm looking at is that we can start some Saturday schools. You know, they're trying to eliminate our history, but we've got to come and do it ourselves.
Freedom schools. Freedom schools, right, Greg?
Yes,
freedom schools. We're almost out of time again. Where should people come, Frank, at 11 o'clock up until what time?
Until about 12:30. So we'll be here at the African-American Civil War Memorial. The statue at 10th and U Street, and that right next door to the Masonic Temple and across the street from the African American Civil War Museum. 209,000 soldiers who fought in the Civil War. And all of these soldiers, by the way, spent their whole career in the war zone. These guys volunteered in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia. They spent 2 or 3 years. We don't send our army in the field for that long now. Not anymore. No, you're 90 days now, and they bring you back home and let you get some R&R, and they try to send you back. These guys went in from the time they went in. They didn't know who was going to win until the time this war was over. They were in the battlefield. So we have a lot of history here, a lot of perseverance, a lot of hard work. We know we shall win because right is on our side.
And we look forward to the museum officially opening the expanded museum later this year. And remember what Harry Jones, who worked with Frank for years and years, told us. But how many tens of thousands of enslaved and free people were organizing before the Civil War? They were organizing right here at 14th and U. Harry Jones would take us to the places where they actually used to meet. So remember our history, remember our future, and we must continue to organize. We're going out with Frank Song and Chuck Song, Battle Hymn, Sojourners, Battle Hymn, Sweet Honey in the Rock. Thank you, Kalia. Thank you to all. To everyone, and we got to keep fighting, keep organizing.
Fighting for the union, we are fighting for the
thinking Gabriel's horn.